You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I'm your host, Anna Edwards. Today is Monday. Today is also the day after the weekend of Hurricane Irene. Irene blew through our area this weekend on Saturday. And as really expected, of course, this area tends to suffer most from the saturation of the ground, abundance of rain, and then high winds. And we tend to lose power. We tend to deal with flooding. Lots of trees down throughout the area. I think across the state and North Carolina, over a million people without power. In our area, the likelihood of people being without power for more than a week is very high. I think we are all trying to pay attention to any announcements coming out of the city and the state regarding the state of emergency for our area, but also literally what services, what we can expect from services from the city to provide assistance to people in need in this time. One of the things to note is that this has been described as the second biggest outage since Hurricane Isabel. And for those of you who were in the area, we know what a phenomenal ordeal that was. People were without power for 13 days in some areas. Refrigerators, of course, began to be room temp. Our refrigerator is at room temperature at this point. So we're kind of using it as a big cooler. And when we can get ice, which has been very difficult the last couple of days, that's the plan, to put ice in the refrigerator and keep using it as a kind of cooler. But at a certain point, of course, you're going to have to start figuring out what to do with the food, cooking it if you can with grills or neighbors who may have grills. And of course, making sure that you still have water and access to each other. I think one of the biggest and most important things is to stay in touch with each other. So Irene's impact, of course, can be with us for quite a while. And I decided to go ahead and check the city website while we're on the air so that we can talk about this. And I'll tell you that one of the reasons is that the Defenders Live today, I had an entirely different program planned for today, but our loss of power and circumstances for even getting access to the internet, and really in a lot of areas, cell phone service was very poor, certainly for most of, certainly Saturday, but Sunday in particular. I almost felt like it was worse after the hurricane passed through than it was during Hurricane Irene. And so in light of all of that, some of the things that I had planned for today's show were not going to happen. So it, of course, was obvious that we would need to focus on the immediate situation. And that is Irene, Hurricane Irene. For those of you who heard the show last week, you know that a very good friend of ours, Sister Yafe, passed last Sunday weekend. And we, her name, before she took her own name of Yafe, was Irene Parker. And so a lot of us have been thinking about Irene during this weather and in the impact that had been felt across the region. So Irene, we greet you once again. One of the things, again, we are looking at the city's website in order to give you sort of an up-to-the-minute report from them, because we feel that Defenders Live can be that kind of a service to those of you who tune in. And one of the things that they have said is that the city government will be open today, and that for regular business hours, unless otherwise noted, Richmond Public Schools are on a 12-month and essential personnel being asked to report to work as normal. And those employees of the public school system who are in need of special consideration should, of course, contact their immediate supervisor. The following, however, city locations are closed due to lack of power, and that is the Southside Community Services Center. That's an important Southside social services hub, so mark that that is not open because of a lack of power. Neither is Main Street Station, the West End Library, the Westover Hills Library, and the Belmont Library. You can see there's some focus here on the south side. We live in the south of the river, Forest Hill, sort of Thames Avenue corridor, and an awful lot of that is without power at this time. The city's Emergency Operations Center has been deactivated. They have switched their emphasis to the Customer Care Center, and it is open and accepting residents' calls for service until 7 p.m. If you have had a tree fall onto your home, you are asked to call 311 or 646-7000 to have a city building inspector come and assess for structural damage. If you are without utilities or food, and or are in need of shelter, you should call the Red Cross at 804-780-2250. 780-2250 is the number to call regarding utilities or food. And as a reassurance, the city is letting us know that the water treatment plant did not sustain any storm damage and is completely functional. The integrity of the water distribution system has not been compromised, and the city's water is safe for consumption and adequate for fire suppression. Power outages have affected traffic signals, as many are not working properly or not at all. Residents are encouraged to remain at home and avoid travel if at all possible, but motorists are asked to take caution when proceeding through all intersections and asked to stop at all intersections and railroad crossings in which the signal is malfunctioning or not working as required by law. Throughout the city, streetlight restoration work will continue until dark. And I have to say that I have done some driving in the days after, and what we have noticed is that people are being very good. People really are approaching those intersections carefully and really looking at other drivers in order to be sure who's going to stop and who's going to go, and pretty much taking turns like you would at any four-way stop sign intersection. And so that's good. It's good that we have been ingrained enough in our traffic system that we have an idea what to do when there are no lights. So we should be very assured, I think reassured by that. But all of these things bring to mind several concerns. Of course, the longer the power outages go on, the longer food is going to be one of the big issues. As people either use up or lose the food that's in their refrigerators and freezers, access to what's available throughout the community, our grocery stores are going to be more important. Transportation for our most vulnerable and poor residents, those who are homebound, these are where the cracks in the system are always going to show up, and most particularly with our neighbors and friends who may not have family support or strong friend support or be in outlying areas. So that's where we really want to count on each other, and we are going to just remind you that there may be a neighbor in your area that has not been reached out to, does not have a cell phone, or their service may not be working. So it would probably be a good idea to connect with other neighbors and check on each other, check on your friends and neighbors, just to be sure that they're okay and see if there are any needs that they have that are not being met. One of the services lines for for getting help in the community is 211, and that's a nationwide number, all locally coordinated. So calling 211 is an important number if you are looking for services related to health and human care. If you, again, have had a tree fall onto your home, you should call 311. And the other number, of course, is 646-7000. That's our public utilities city line. And again, if you are without utilities or food at this time or are in need of shelter, you should contact the Red Cross at 780-2250. And I'll do a lot of that repeating as we go through the program today. I want to point out that during Hurricane Isabel, One of the things that was instituted because of the long period of time without power, and there were actually, I think, a greater loss of water access for people in that time period as well. But it was also much hotter, as I recall, and the delivery of ice, the preparedness for to deliver ice to people, was really was pretty poor. It took in some of the poorer outlying neighborhoods. It took like for example in Church Hills had a distribution site identified, and it took 4 days before any ice was delivered. And by that time, of course, you know, food stores were gone in terms of your refrigerator and freezer, and it was very difficult for people to preserve anything. And one of the things that was instituted was a food stamp distribution system, or a way for people to apply for food assistance. And that system, if you recall, there was an attempt to get that expedited very quickly so that people could access additional funds in order to restock their refrigerators, restock their food stores, and make it through what they knew was going to be a very difficult time. Unfortunately, because of the way in which it was devised, afterwards, the repercussions lasted a couple of years in terms of people being accused of fraud. And I think the most devastating thing was to watch while city employees were actually accused of fraud during that time period. It was very rough. It was really, really rough. Because, as always, it's very... trying to draw the line between who needs food and who doesn't, between trying to demonstrate, you know, sufficiently low income and being just over the line, is very challenging. And it seems that it's very important to think about it maybe a little bit differently. I think one of the things we have to realize is that in a time of crisis, people have tremendous need, and it's going to be a little bit harder to keep rigid and hard expectations in place when people are really kind of panicky. They're really panicky about what is going to be available to them when they don't have the same kind of safety net that others do. There's a role for our government. There's a role for our city, our state, and our federal government in national and statewide and community-wide crises that cannot be served by individuals. And it's very important that those systems be looked at. It's one of the reasons we've looked at the development of our emergency operations center, emergency response system in the city, which has drastically improved over the last several years. It's certainly the Jones administration has a better record, I think, in this regard, especially in terms of communication. Have to really remark that they have been very logical and met expectations around getting the information to people that they need in as timely a manner as they have been able to. And I think that is to be commended. And the responses have been pretty good. We know that there are a couple of city shelters out there. And when we come back from this little station ID break, I'll give you some more information about that. You are listening, if you are just tuning in, to The Defenders Live, and this show comes to you on Mondays at noon on WRIR 97.3. That's Richmond's low-power FM radio station, 97.3. You can listen online via the internet. It streams live during the show at WRIR.org. And I believe the show is repeated on Tuesdays, somewhere between 12 noon and 2 o'clock. And one of these days I'll try to get that sorted out. But in any event, if you want to learn more about the Defenders, please visit our website, defendersfje.org, and our blog, defendersfje.blogspot.com. You can give us a call at 804-644-5834, and you can send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. And one of the things that we'd like to ask you to do, you know, the Defenders is not a community services organization. We don't have the resources or the person power to be able to go out and address problems directly. We have in the past been able to do certain things, but one of the things that we do have the ability to do is disseminate information and is to report on your experiences. And so what we would like you to do when you have a moment is to either give us a call or send us an email about what you are experiencing in your neighborhood in the aftermath of Hurricane Irene. And that will help us prepare to be able to give you a kind of report back in the weeks to come in terms of how our community is dealing with it, how it's recovering, how individuals have been affected, how neighborhoods have been affected, and we can sort of tie that to giving you back that information so that we can sort of all be on the same page about how effective services are, how effective our abilities to connect with each other, how effective our state and local governments are at meeting the need in a time of crisis. And this is one of those. We were lucky. The reports have been that Irene could have been entirely devastating throughout its path, perhaps because we were a little bit more prepared, but also I think we were all extremely lucky that Irene did not cause as much damage as was feared and as people were prepared for. There has never been a time in history when New York City has shut down its subway system in anticipation of weather, or certainly not a hurricane. And there has never been a time when so many people, I think, have had to be evacuated from so many places along the Atlantic coast. And that has had a profound effect in and of itself, simply the movement of people away from those low-lying areas. Just goes to show how much we have learned, how much there is to know to prepare for the possibility of a storm of this kind. And the other thing, of course, is that, it does bring to mind and has stirred lots of conversations, reignited conversations about the impact of global warming and the severity of these storms. Every time we have a new hurricane season, we are thinking about the fact that are they just getting worse and worse and worse? We keep reporting on things that way, certainly. We keep saying that, this is the worst storm since, in recorded history. And this is, five times worse than it was, 5 years ago. And of course, I'm paraphrasing, but there is always this sense. Now, the news media sort of has this need anyway in order to attract attention and to attract listeners to put things in sort of superlative terms. This is the worst, the best, the strongest, the latest and all that. But how to sort of discern the truth of it. And then once you decide that you accept the premise that things are getting worse in terms of our weather, in terms of our global conditions. And I think really no one is denying that. Well, there may be a few, but there are always going to be the great deniers. And there are also going to be people who are going to say, well, that's just the way it is. The earth is making its, going through its changes. And there may be nothing we can do about that. But there is, of course, what we do to contribute to that plays a very big part in that. All right, that's my phone. Thank you, Live Radio. All right, I'll take care of that. As we are talking about the impact of global warming and conversations about the impact of global warming, we, of course, are looking at the way crises like this, like Hurricane Irene, as in Isabel in the past, and of course today being the fifth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, we really are looking at the ways in which we are preparing, which communities are prepared and have the ability to be prepared for these kinds of disasters, who gets services, when they get services, and whether looking after our most vulnerable serves the greater community, which of course it does, because you have to look at our communities from the perspective of what you want it to be. And if you want it to be a community that really can say that it is a a really top community, if you're looking to achieve status across the country and be, you know, a most livable city, then you have to be a city that looks after the people who live there. And that has to go across the board. And so it's, again, one of the reasons why we remind you and ourselves to go and check on our neighbors and make sure they're okay. And find out what's needed and then rise to the occasion. And some of rising to that occasion will be what you can do yourself, and some of it will be in connecting people to the services that are provided by the city. So that's, that's one of the things. I talked to a friend of mine at the main branch of the library, and of course, internet access has been a problem for a lot of people whose livelihoods depend upon having that access. And the libraries that are open, according to this morning, are the Broad Rock, the main branch, of course, Hull Street, East End, Ginter Park, and North Avenue. The branches that are not open are the West End Library, the Westover Hills Library, and the Belmont Library, and that is again due to lack of power. One of the things people, of course, are going to have difficulty with is recharging cell phones. If you've had your cell phone service working okay, but you, of course, have run out of power, some people can rely on their car chargers if they've got them. But if you don't, then you're going to be looking around for either friends and neighbors who may have power or have generators who would be kind enough to let you recharge your cell phone. Or you're going to be looking for places like the library and other public sites. And some of the restaurants that are open in your area might be able to let you do that as well. So those are the things you want to look out for. And again, for people who don't have transportation, again, that's where friends and neighbors come in, and we can check on how the GRTC is providing services during this time, if it's normal services or if there are some emergency provisions being provided. The two emergency sites for shelter that were open during the weekend, and I'm not sure if they're still open now, so we'll have to check on that, were, of course, the Arthur Ashe Center near the Diamond and Huguenot High School on the south side on Forest Hill Avenue. Bus number 71 runs between downtown and Huguenot High School, runs that Forest Hill route, and is one of the buses that I know about from experience. And I couldn't actually at the moment tell you which bus it is that would get you to the Arthur Ashe Center. But for those of you who were in the know on Saturday, of course, I think between 12 and 2, there was shuttle service, bus service that was provided to those shelters before the storm got to its worst point. So we know that people are thinking, we know that our GRT system is thinking about how to get people where they need to be. But as always, you want to check. You want to check and be sure. And again, remind you that we would like to hear from you. We would like to hear your, sort of reporting in from your neighborhood on how things have gone during this period and during the period until all power is restored. We'd like to hear from you. And that's at 804-644-5834 and defendersfje@hotmail.com. Again, defendersfje@hotmail.com. Hurricane Irene, here we are. Well, just to give you a heads up on what I was hoping to do the show on today and plan to do the show on in the coming weeks, I've mentioned in the past the issue of Mauritania and contemporary slavery, or rather the fact that slavery has, while it ceased in the United States after 1865, there were other places that didn't end it until long after that. And one of the places where slavery is ongoing is in Mauritania and to a certain extent in the Sudan. And there are probably other places that I simply am not prepared to report on just yet. But One of the issues is, of course, in Mauritania, is an ongoing problem between those in power and those not in power, and what has been referred to as the an attempt to to make Arabic all things in the country of Mauritania, meaning imposing an Arabic cultural sensibility and structure and primacy throughout the country, denying the African traditions, the Black African traditions, and going to be providing an interview with a man named Bakri Tandia, who has been a longtime activist on this issue. And in 1998, at the first Slave Roots Conference, presented a paper called The Plight of Black Mauritanians that does a very good job of sort of giving a brief overview of the historical situation and the present-day situation of Black Mauritanians. So I look forward to bringing that to you in the coming weeks and to being able to have that conversation with Bakri Tandia. He has a brother who was one of the founding members of the African Community Network here in Richmond, and we have, of course, featured them on several occasions and look forward to having more conversations with members of the ACN in the coming months as well. So please stay tuned for that. And of course, just a quick reminder to save October 10th, 2011, save that date. We will be commemorating Gabriel's Rebellion, and we will be celebrating the reclamation of the site of Richmond's African Burial Ground. And we invite you all to join us that evening. And more will be posted on our website in the coming weeks and months. So I want to thank you for tuning in, remind you to check the city's website, richmondgov.com. And check our website, defendersfje.blogspot.com, as we try to keep it up to date on what's happening in the city during this period. And again, to give us a call and let us know what's happening in your neighborhood, 644-5834 and defendersfje@hotmail.com. Thanks for tuning in. Remember that kindness matters as we continue to engage the struggle for social justice in our world. And I look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks to my engineers and my DJ. And we will see you next week.